I just can't have any social life right now.
Don't worry about it. We're just having coffee. We'll be antisocial.
Hello and welcome to A Damn Fine Espresso. It's the final espresso of our summer series, and it's also a kind of epilogue to our summer series. I'm here joined by Sam. Hey, Sam.
Hello there, Matt.
And we are again going to be talking about David Lynch, and more specifically, we are going to be talking about Twin Peaks. Because Sam, you are one of those strange, rare creatures who didn't see Twin Peaks basically till this year, right?
Yeah, locked away somewhere in a cabin in the woods, probably never having been exposed. But there's a story behind this, and I think I told it briefly in our David Lynch dedicated episode. I avoided Twin Peaks, because I think I was a little bit too young when it was actually showing on television. But secondly, I heard from people who were watching it, and one of them was my dad, was intrigued by the murder mystery story at the beginning, but then very much like turned off by the elements of the supernatural and by the comical ways that the series took. And I think he stopped somewhere within season one, even probably. And then my sister was a big David Lynch fan. She showed me the movies, but she also was really turned off by Fire Walk With Me, by the Twin Peaks movie. So to me, Twin Peaks was something to stay away from that wasn't quite up there with maybe the movie David Lynch that I knew and I liked mostly. And so also because it was a series and it took such a long time to watch it, to get into it, I kind of left it on the side and I only dabbled a little bit in the first few episodes and then left it because at the time I was really disconcerted, I think, by seeing Bob for the first time. And it wasn't a very good phase in my life. So I thought, okay, no, this is not the series to watch right now. So I left it again.
Which is kind of interesting because, I mean, creatures or characters or entities like Bob pop up throughout David Lynch's filmography. I mean, if you think of The Mystery Man, last month you talked about Lost Highway. It's not like creepy demonic figures are kind of completely not what Lynch does.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, once you start watching it episode by episode, you of course see the elements that are very Lynchian. I think just at the time, I do think Bob, however, has a different quality than The Mystery Man. The Mystery Man to me was still within that cool, slightly detached darkness of Lost Highway, which affected me differently than Twin Peaks, which is much more this quaint village with characters you actually start caring for. And then there's this murder of Laura Palmer that is at the center. And I think you're differently invested than with something like Lost Highway. And I think that's why I felt when Bob first showed up, it really is a shock to the system that strikes differently.
Absolutely. But to get back to the time when you weren't yet watching Twin Peaks, I'm wondering, you were already into David Lynch when the third season, that was 2016, I think, the third season that was also in by some people called The Return, came out. Were you at all tempted at that point to revisit or to visit Twin Peaks proper?
I think by the time I tried watching it, there was probably already news of a new Twin Peaks series coming out. It must have been 2015, 16, where I watched some of the first season episodes. So that could have played a role. I really don't remember. But I think when it did come out, it was difficult for us to watch because of streaming services at the time. So I kind of probably postponed it a little bit and thought, oh, Twin Peaks, yeah, I know, I should actually watch it. But again, this dedicated watching of two full seasons, 30 episodes, before you can get into The Return, I think it was always too big of an obstacle to me.
Yeah, it's easier to watch something that's 2-3 hours. You can watch Mulholland Drive, Lost Highway, you can watch those in an evening and you've seen it.
Mm-hmm. And I do love these films. So I rewatched Mulholland Drive, you know, many times, Blue Velvet. Now also, thanks to our summer series, some of the other films, some of them for the first time, like The Straight Story or Elephant Man that I had never really seen. So I think if I have an evening to myself and I can choose between my David Lynch box set and Twin Peaks, I think so far I would always go for the films or rewatch them or watch them maybe for the first time. So this has really been a chance and one that I really went for because I knew this would be my chance to finally get into Twin Peaks.
Just in brief, what was it like to finally watch it? Did it live up or down or sideways to your expectations? Did you come in and did it feel like, okay, this is obviously David Lynch, or did it feel like its own thing?
Well, I I have to say, I do really like watching it. It feels like, in a way, a blast from the past in like a double way, right? There's this 1950s Hollywood feel that is always in Lynch, like references, costumes, styles, look, actors, actresses that are in there that clearly speak of his love of a certain era, especially the 1950s, that I love also, let's say, in Blue Velvet or other films that have that suburban 1950s feel. And then, of course, also watching it as a very late 80s, early 90s series with the memory of that was the fashionable series when I was in my early teens that was watched and talked about by so many people. And some of my friends are big fans of Twin Peaks and they've recommended to me so many times. So it feels great as an experience to finally enter this world. To me, I really, really enjoyed watching the pilot episode, which is, you know, cinematic, Lynchian, which opens up this world, this mystery already. It's very much this murder mystery procedural setup still that I think also my dad enjoyed and that murder mystery fans must have enjoyed. And then as you enter the series, obviously it's a different feel. You can tell that the maybe budget constraints, it's a television series, there's more studio work or backlot work. And maybe this sense of really being in this, I guess, Washington state and this eerie atmosphere creeps in a little bit less. But obviously you're then in the realm of this television world with a myriad of characters opening up. And that's, I guess, what I didn't expect is that world of different families, mythologies, obviously the FBI, the different agents, the sheriff's station, all these different micro worlds that open up to you. It's something that I didn't quite expect, but surprisingly enjoyed. Even the more mundane pedestrian stories, they still come together to form this very quirky, enjoyable, amusing, then again, scary. Yeah, again, a kaleidoscope. We mentioned the term again in connection with, was it Mulholland Drive? Where we said there is this kaleidoscopic feel about it, where the different pieces don't seem to match at first and that the moods are so different from, let's say, the high school drama to the deep down family melodrama to the FBI, sometimes comedy and endearing bits and pieces. But somehow it creates a world that is surprisingly cohesive in at least the first season and beyond.
Absolutely. I mean, it is interesting. As you said, it's a complete mashup. It's also a complete genre mashup. And of course, David Lynch very consciously, and Mark Frost probably, they consciously also worked within the realm of the soap opera. There's a lot there that I think comes straight from the soap operas of the 80s. And this combination of soap opera, murder mystery, and then the deeply, deeply surreal is something that I think was definitely very, very unique at the time. I think you have had some more of that. I mean, you do see traces of Twin Peaks in later TV series, something like, you know, Desperate Housewives, even The X-Files. I think there's definitely, you see some of the DNA, but it's generally on a surface level. I think what Lynch manages to do is really that he's got soap opera that's deeply infused with something much more ominous metaphysical, but he's also got something metaphysical and surreal that's deeply infused with the soap opera. You can't separate these things. It's not like this scene is soap opera, this scene is kind of murder mystery. They mix. And that mixture, I think, is one of the fascinations.
Yeah, and it is unique because I was thinking some of the bits and pieces, let's say if you saw them individually as scenes or maybe just on the page, they would be cheesy, right? There's stuff at the diner that goes on or some of the love relationships between Shelley and Bobby. And these scenes are sometimes infused with dialogue and even the acting in the scene is sometimes over the top or cheesy or very soap opera-y. But then I think it's either the Badalamenti score that comes in, even though it tends to be repetitive on just a few themes that are very recognizable. But then the way it's framed and the way it's combined with other scenes that it exchanges with, it becomes unsettling. It becomes emotional, more emotional than you would want it to be sometimes. I'm thinking of the relationships within the diner where, for instance, Everett McGill and Peggy Lipton, they have this secret relationship, which is basically, you know, 1950s cheese, right? It's
totally
this out of marriage relationship that slowly builds up. It's not really in the open, but you feel this is going to come back. And it's supposed to feel a little laughable, maybe. But then within the Twin Peaks context and within that murder mystery and the secrets that are revealed by it, of course, you're still thinking of, okay, so how does that relate to Laura Palmer? How does that relate to what really happened? What is the DNA of this Twin Peaks as a place? And that's why you're strangely fascinated by it. And it doesn't turn you away. It doesn't throw you out of the story necessarily. It still feels like part of a very quirky, mysterious, puzzling, maybe the puzzle pieces coming together to get behind the secret and behind the mystery.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. When we talked about David Lynch in the first episode of this summer series, I mentioned that to some extent, Twin Peaks has a cozy Lynch feel to it. I mean, obviously it's TV in the late 80s, early 90s. There's only certain things you could do at the time. And because of that, I think it also lulls you into a sense of security at times. It's TV Lynch. It cannot get that bad. But then, as you said, you know, Bob is still so effective, so potent. The moments of surrealism, I think, they're easily parodied, but the parody never gets at how unsettling these things can be. And even in moments when it's, I think, when you don't have little men dancing or people talking backwards or Bob, even just the shots of the trees and the wind the traffic lights, there's a certain visual poetry that I think is very much David Lynch. And that is very, you know, where you also don't feel that he was cut back by TV and by the production values. There's moments, I think, which are so pure Lynch in this that are still great to enjoy.
Absolutely. And I think there is also a sense of sincerity from the cast altogether. I think even though there might not be the greatest actors and actresses, even though it's a mix of it, you know, the great and the slightly less talented in the cast, again, on the surface, but I think because they imbue this with so much intensity, you know, the looks, the pace is sometimes very slow, the dialogue can come across as quite sluggish or not very, you know, highbrow, but then it suddenly changes with something very philosophical. I'm thinking of, is it Colonel Hurley? I'm blacking out here.
You mean Briggs? You mean Colonel Briggs?
Colonel Briggs. Thank you very much. I'm still a little bit figuring out characters' names.
You haven't watched it five times like other people on this podcast, right?
Exactly.
Now.
I have this gallery in front of me of characters that I'm trying to piece together. So he, or also, of course, the log lady, famously, suddenly philosophy comes in. Suddenly there is an extremely complex line of dialogue or exchange of dialogues or little monologue. So you have to be really on guard with Twin Peaks that you don't think, oh, this is just going to be this love relationship and these mundane issues, this high school love affair. No, it actually always surprises you with something that is mysterious, that is surreal, that is very deep suddenly. And I feel, for instance, the character of Cheryl Lee, I mean, she's Laura Palmer, but then she's also her cousin Maddie. And how that plays also on a level of, it is somewhat cheesy high school and young people having feelings for each other relationship. But at the same time, it's also very perturbing. Someone who looks exactly like the murder victim in a different wig, who is so present in the show and everybody somehow relates to and somewhat thinks, well, you know, I'm reminded of Laura. I'm reminded of my feelings. I'm reminded maybe of my guilt. And she also plays it so sincerely, even though she plays it like an American teenager or young woman. So it's not like great acting per se, but within the context of all these relationships, it is really profound.
Absolutely. And I think as much as some of the horror, the surreal horror still basically hits, I think it's, as you said, the sadness, the mournfulness. In the end, it is about a death. And yes, it is cheesy and over the top and surreal and all of that. But there is an emotional reality. I think there's an emotional reality very often to Lynch where, you know, what happens literally on screen may be surreal or may be cheesy or may be soap opera or may be pastiche. But the underlying emotions, and I think that's definitely something I have more and more also with his other films, with something like Mulholland Drive, definitely, where, you know, the first time I saw these films when I was mostly in my 20s, it was mostly the weirdness that attracted me, the strangeness, the quirky darkness. And now it's how that quirky darkness emphasizes and amplifies the emotional reality beneath it that I think I keep coming back to.
Absolutely. And the characters are endearing. You're close to them. I mean, we haven't really talked about Kyle MacLachlan as kind of the protagonist or one of the key figures, of course, one of the most famous ones. And the sheriff, you know, Harry S. Truman, the people at the police station, there's a sense of like, you know, they're like friends. They're close to you. They go for all these coffees. They have all this pie together. They have all these donuts on the table. And there's something very comforting and cozy, and you're invested in them. I think almost without exception. And all of them have their, you know, backstories. They have their relationships. They have, some of them have rather, you know, laughable little problems that they face, especially then we'll talk about the second season, I guess. But some of them are really also, I don't know, you feel deeply connected to them and their smaller or bigger quests or their smaller and bigger questions. And I think it is the staging, it is the what Lynch does, what Frost and Lynch did in the writing process, but it's also in the execution, it's also in the editing, like you said, the cross-cutting of these scenes, the landscape, the sense of a place, of a cohesive place, even though it's filmed in different locations, from what I hear. And also, again, music. I mean, Badalamenti does, in a way, a simple job, but I think the way the music is used to refer to the place, the waterfall, the woods, the Laura Palmer theme, and then these jazzy, on the surface, very relaxed musical bits and pieces that reek of comedy. But then somewhat there's a twist and the music suddenly stops and another theme comes in to make you realize, oh no, this scene is taking a turn. This is not just shallow. This is not just comedy. This is leading somewhere that might be unexpectedly scary. And that can change on a whim. It's quite intricate how that is like weaved together.
Absolutely. And I think that's also where the soap opera format and the TV series format definitely helps, because if you've got something that's 2-3 hours, you have to have the emotional punch immediately. If you can build something up over 20 episodes, I think the build up, for instance, to Maddie Ferguson, Laura's cousin, to her demise, works so well because you have the time to build it up. And not every moment in that build up is fantastic television. But the sum of all these moments adds to the horror and the sheer sadness of that one death. We did a podcast episode about this specific episode years and years and years ago, and I would still say that for me is an encapsulation of everything that Twin Peaks never is and everything that it can be, the episode Lonely Souls, which is also one of the episodes directed by David Lynch, and it totally shows. At the time, I think I was watching Twin Peaks for the fifth time or so, and I had become a bit tired with some of the cheesiness. I'd become a bit disillusioned with some of the acting, which wasn't always great, as you said. But then that episode comes and it hit as hard as ever.
It is, to me, probably the best single episode. And it stands out immediately. Obviously, I knew from you and I knew from Alan and what I had read about and the reviews, the ratings. You could see this was a standout episode. But then actually watching it and seeing the culmination of all these questions around, obviously, Laura Palmer's death, but then this repetition of it. You know, it's happening again. It's happening again. What the giant tells Dale Cooper in the nightclub, the roadhouse, the horror of that and seeing that happen again and just having all these backflashes to Laura Palmer's death. And because I started out with the Twin Peaks movie, Fire Walk With Me, obviously harking back or forward, I don't know, on the timeline, how you want to call this. But seeing where that came from and where maybe also the motivation for Lynch to make the movie after the second season comes from, to really focus on the heart of Twin Peaks, the very, very dark heart of Twin Peaks, and seeing what was the origin of that story and obviously who is responsible for Laura Palmer's death, and to reveal that as a family tragedy is enormously powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that's clearly a highlight, if not the highlight of the show. In all its bits and pieces, I think you described it really well in that early episode, from the very first shot, the setup, the staging, to the devastating ending, including the songs that are used and the intercutting of that moment of that revelation, is probably the best that came out of the Twin Peaks universe.
Absolutely. I think it also shows how difficult it is to do Lynch right, because, as I said, you can absolutely see which episodes are directed by David Lynch. And I think his material takes a certain sensitivity as a director. And I think there's a lot of directors who do a good job with the episodes, but no one does Lynch like Lynch, obviously.
And I think it goes downhill from there, pretty much. I think from the production history, you know, we know that Lynch didn't want to reveal Laura Palmer's killer as early, and he would have gone on for many more episodes building that, and studio pressure led him to reveal it early. And then I think he became detached also from, he didn't direct any more episodes until the very last one of season two, which I haven't seen yet. But it was interesting knowing that and then seeing how that plays out, because for a while they were still able to hold up the, you know, the excitement from knowing who it was and then seeing how Killer Bob is in that character. But then they kill the character off. And I was perturbed by that, because I thought, well, it would be great to now see somewhat, you know, us having that knowledge, having that tension around other characters. And that works really well for another two episodes or so. But then once that character is gone and we know who killed Laura Palmer, it becomes very difficult. And I think that's when, on the one hand, things start to be much more shallow, mundane, and comedic, and too quirky for my taste, and too cheap looking and sounding, because this tension is gone and it's not no longer about, oh, this person might have been behind this murder and there might be some deep connection to it. And then they try to bring up alternatives. Suddenly it's about Dale Cooper's predicament within the FBI, his background, characters from his past that start showing up. And you're just less invested. It's less well done. It's much more within these studio sets, and somehow the bits and pieces of Twin Peaks, Washington State that are shown seem a little out of place as well. I found myself still watching it with some interest, obviously, because I like many of the characters. I'm thinking of Piper Laurie as Catherine Martell. I mean, obviously, she's one of my favorite actresses, and seeing her in this is great. And you know, her different roles she plays. Jack Nance is great. The Joan Chen story arc is interesting, together with the sheriff. There's a lot to stay invested in. Also, how Leo is this threatening character in the wheelchair. There's some real scary tension around that for a while. But then also a lot of it is, yeah, I mentioned the term mundane already a couple of times. It feels very like I'm watching soap opera and I'm distracted. I'm more often on my phone, I notice, just researching about Twin Peaks and the cast and so on. So clearly it's less involving and much less interesting than up until that point of that revelation and a little bit beyond.
Absolutely. No, I think it starts feeling a bit like fanfic. Again, like people trying to imitate Lynch or like copying Lynch in the things that they liked, but not really getting at what I really do think that I can't think of a single writer, director, artist who does exactly what Lynch does as well as Lynch. You have many directors or films that are called Lynchian, but very often it's a kind of surface similarity at best. And I do think that, you know, what you mentioned with, you know, once Ray Wise as Laura's dad, Leland Palmer, leaves the series, he is fantastic. I mean, I think he's not necessarily the most subtle actor, but he's a very effective actor, especially at capturing the duality of Leland Palmer. And he just becomes Leland Palmer. Everything I've seen him in since then, I've seen Leland Palmer slash Bob. And once he's gone, you've got another kind of antagonist, bad guy in Wyndham Earl. And I think Wyndham Earl, even though I think some fans really like him, he is much more of a panto villain. He's much more what someone who doesn't really get what Lynch is imagines a Lynch bad guy to be like.
And I think all the characters that were set up as somewhat villains or potential murderers. I'm thinking of Richard Beimer as Ben Horn. He also deflates because he turns into, you know, has his mental crisis, and then you see him just playing around with toys at war games, and there's something pathetic around it. And before it, there was a threatening quality to him. And I think also for some of the other characters that are, I mentioned Leo before, obviously he was extremely threatening in the time when he wasn't a wheelchair-bound vegetable. I mean, these scenes were really, really scary as well. So I think a lot of the suspense around these characters was deflated as soon as Ray Wise is revealed as the killer and Bob is no longer there, at least for the moment. I'm not sure if they're going to bring him back as an entity that can also enter other characters. I'm very curious about that, whether they go that down that path, because that was clearly the most potentially devastating thing about the revelation, but also the potential of evil in the show. Now they're talking about the white cabin, the black cabin in the woods. And I know about the red room. Obviously, we've seen bits and pieces of that already, also in the film. So I'm curious to see if they can bring in the sense of threat where Twin Peaks as a whole is infested by all these connections to the supernatural, to the woods, the closeness to it. There is potential, but I think at the moment they don't know what they're doing. The last episode was directed by Diane Keaton, which was very surprising to me, that they let all kinds of people have a go at it. And she seemed to have enjoyed it based on her statements around that. And obviously David Lynch gave them a lot of freedom as, you know, being the executive producer still, of having a go at staging it and doing it, maybe trying to imitate that Lynchian style. But yeah, it does not gel, this sense of comedic setup without a really convincing threat in the background. Not quite sure if they knew what they were doing at this point.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I do think that you've got a real treat to look forward to in the final episode. I think the final episode, I don't quite know how it manages this weird kind of alchemy, but it's not like it does a completely different thing, but it does it in a truly deeply Lynchian way. And it is basically an episode that, again, on an emotional level, on a vibesy level, works so fantastically well that it saves the series completely, I think. You know, even, you know, with me knowing what horrors there are in season two, especially in the second part of season two, the final episode always lands in, well, let's put it like that, don't watch it when you're having a bad day.
Oh, wow. Well, I will try to place it at a good moment in time, but I think that's also what keeps me going. You know, last night I watched 4 episodes in a row because I'm trying to get to the point where I'm enjoying it again, because there is good stuff ahead. I also hear good things about Twin Peaks: The Return. So my goal is to finish watching season 2, get by as unscathed as possible. And looking forward, obviously, to the ending of the season. I also hear that some of the penultimate episodes are better again. And then clearly the last one has very good reviews, to then see what Lynch did with The Return. Because I'm really, really curious how he can leave that gap in time, bring back, I think, many of the characters from the original series, from what I saw on the cast list, add a few interesting new ones. Because I think one thing that I enjoy about season 2 is like how they bring in new characters, and some of the actors, I'm thinking of David Warner, who just showed up for the very first time as this new threatening presence that has to do with Joan Chen and Piper Laurie and Jack Nance, that storyline. Very curious to see how they're going to keep him in a series. So obviously Twin Peaks had a big draw at the time when it was made, to people who wanted to be on the show because it was such a hype for a while. So it has stayed interesting in terms of like characters coming in and leaving. Thinking of Denise, played by David Duchovny. Famously, obviously, I'd heard about him being in the show, but then, I mean, he's a treat within season 2 as well. So there's enough things to tide you over, I feel, despite the lack in, or the slump in quality.
Absolutely. So do I hear that correctly, that you are planning to definitely watch the third season, The Return, as well?
Yes, because I bought the box set with all the episodes in there. So I have to get there. I want to get there. It's not just to finish the box set, but because I heard good things, and because I trust David Lynch that by 2016, 17, he was able to bring something interesting and gain back control of that show that I think he loved. And that was so essential to his career, to do something interesting with it. I'm very excited to see what that is.
It will be very interesting. I'm hoping that we can again talk about it, perhaps for an espresso later this year. Because obviously for those of us who watched Twin Peaks pretty much when it came out, and then we waited 25, 30 years, and we were older, and the people were older, and there'd been this gap. I think that gap has an effect, obviously, on how you watch the series. But since you're obviously not going to wait 27 years to watch the third season, it will be interesting to see how it hits home for you. coming into it pretty much straight after the second season.
Yeah, I'm excited. And I think that's the one advantage of really not having seen it at all, that you can now kind of seamlessly go and skip those 27 years or so and get straight into it. And I'm very curious to see how it feels in terms of like atmosphere, how Lynchian it is. It is a very late Lynch because he had stopped making movies pretty much at this time for quite a while. I mean, Mulholland Drive and Inland Empire were his last ones, and that was already 10 years before he made the new Twin Peaks. So I'm also curious to see what kind of filmmaker he was at this point. We haven't got a lot of examples to see how Lynch was in his later work. We somehow stop in the early 2000s and then have this major gap. So yeah, obviously it's also a big gap in my knowledge of Lynch and him as a filmmaker.
At our favorite cinema, The Rex, they are going to do a whole season of David Lynch films in September. They will be showing the entire first season of Twin Peaks on a Saturday afternoon, complete with coffee and cherry pie. Do you think you might be going?
I will definitely give it a thought. It seems that like 7 episodes plus the pilot, that seems like a lot. I assume that's what they're doing, right? I would definitely like to see the pilot on the big screen because it has that cinematic feel. And obviously, I'm also thinking of maybe going to see Fire Walk With Me because I think that would be an amazing experience on the big screen together with some of my other favorite David Lynch films. But I'll definitely give it a thought just for the cherry pie because it looks delicious. And that coffee, even though I know American coffee is not always damn good, but it seems enticing.
Absolutely. Okay, well, in that case, we've already got a kind of semi-date to discuss Twin Peaks Season 3 at some point later this year.
Definitely.
In the meantime, enjoy whatever Lynch you run into. Enjoy whatever damn fine coffee you have. And enjoy the rest of the summer. Thank you very much, Sam.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you very much to our audience. And we will see you again for another damn fine cup of culture. Bye.
Bye-bye.